This is the Insulin podcast, where I, Owen Costello, try to redefine diabetes. In this week's episode,
viewing your food as a form of medication while you live with type 1 diabetes is a great way to view it, because your food is what has the biggest and most immediate impact on your blood sugar. That's just a fact.
But before we get into that, everything you hear on the Insulin podcast is from my own personal experience. And if you have any worries or issues regarding your diabetes, please contact a medical professional. Now, let's get stuck into this episode.
What's up, everybody? Graham, what's happening? Welcome to another episode of the Insulin podcast. I always wonder why I say at the start of every of every episode, welcome back to the Insulin podcast, because it's quite clear what podcast you're listening to. But welcome. Always delighted to have you here, and always delighted to be staring at Graham's face in the camera.
Hey, what's up? How are you?
Good. Speak into the camera, or the camera.
Speaking to the camera. Well, speaking to the camera. I don't want to make this about me again.
Here we go.
And I don't want this to become a habit, because the last episode we recorded on Monday, so post-weekend. And I don't want to keep on talking about my nights out and stuff like that. But last night, I went to see Garth Brooks.
Oh, I knew you were going to say that.
I went to see Garth Brooks in Crow Park. 80,000 Garth Brooks fans with our cowboy hats on and our cowboy boots and our double and triple denim. And I just want to tell you, Owen Costello, and you listening right now, it was one of the greatest nights of my life. Yeehaw.
Was it really?
Oh my God. Say what you want about Garth Brooks, but my God, he can put on a show. So I was thinking, I was there with some guy who works in television, and he said that he was making a documentary about him. But he's made it. It's out tomorrow night on television in Ireland. And he's saying that Garth, it's a large section of the population in America who doesn't like Garth Brooks. But over here, if you don't know, which you probably don't if you're listening around the world, he's a country music star that has sold out 5 nights in Crow Park, our biggest football stadium. 80,000 people, so 400,000 people across 2 weeks going to see Garth Brooks.
That's what I couldn't believe. Like, it's mental. I've probably heard maybe one song of Garth Brooks over my lifetime, maybe more without realizing. So I've nothing really to say about him, but I couldn't believe that he sold out 5 nights in Crow Park. I'm just more surprised at the fact that so many people in Ireland love him. So I wouldn't have thought that.
I think it's not a city thing. There's a lot of country people from the rural parts of Ireland. But I also think there's a section of the population who are going to it because it's kind of like a cultural phenomenon in terms of everyone will remember when Garth Brooks came to Ireland and played 5 nights. Mm. And you want to be there. You want to kind of experience this culture moment in Irish pop culture society. And I just feel like there's a lot of people there for that. But my God, the noise of the stadium. I know a good few songs, but my God, people knew every word of every song. It was bonkers. And he's such a showman. He's got such stage presence. The stage was the width of the pitch. It was just incredible. He was running back and forth. He's lost a serious amount of weight to get in shape for it. He's well in his 50s. He looks incredible.
Do you know, it's funny that you mentioned it's more of a kind of rural Ireland phenomenon. But I was driving home from the north on yesterday. And as I was driving down the motorway, just van after van after van, bus after bus after bus, full of people going to Garth Brooks. And if I stopped, I think actually only once, for diesel on the way back to fill up the car. And there was about 15 vans just stopped off. And anybody that had been in the vans or were in the vans or whatever was wearing their blue jeans, their brown boots.
Yeah, gotta love it. Gotta love it. He's 60, I just Googled, and you should have seen him running back and forth on stage. He's a credit. That's my little bit of news anyway. That's my bit of
what
news.
Was better than that? Or what was better, Graham? the night we went to Annie Mac or that?
That.
Don't you dare say that.
Because that night we went to Annie Mac.
No.
An Irish DJ.
Forget what you're going to say.
Notoriously our greatest night ever. Just great vibes, good friends. The night just kept on going. And that is always up there. And when we get the notifications on Facebook that, oh, it's a year, we always put it in the group. Oh, lads, oh, yeah, it's 8 years now. Sorry, that's now number two.
No.
Garth Brooks, Friends in Low Places. Woo, straight to the top.
I've said it before, but if anybody is interested in being the producer of this podcast, please reach out because Graham's getting the boot.
Well, that's perfect. I'll get a cowboy boot because I want to go and follow Garth Brooks around the world. So I need someone maybe to cover me. Right, we're going to do a few quick fire questions from Instagram today. Owen, I have a couple here in front of me. Are you ready to answer them?
Yes, depending on what they are. Let's go.
Okay. Question number one. What is your favorite Garth Brooks song?
Friends in Low Places. Because you've just said it.
If you had
have asked me that less than 60 seconds ago, I wouldn't know the name of any.
Okay. Serious question number one. Owen, what is your insulin to carb ratio?
Good question. That's it. Okay.
That's it.
So my insulin to carb ratio, like a lot of other people's, will change as the day goes on. So generally speaking, earlier in the day, particularly earlier in the morning, your insulin resistance is higher as a result of cortisol, adrenaline, dawn phenomenon, foot to floor. We've gone through it plenty of times in this podcast. So I require more insulin in the morning than I do at night. So at the start of the day, my insulin to carb ratio is 1 unit of insulin per 20 grams of carbs. And then later on in the day, it will steadily increase to 1 unit of insulin to 30 grams of carbohydrate. Also, while I'm here, while I'm on the topic, I take NovoRapid fast-acting insulin and I take Lantus long-lasting, which is 12 units at 10 a.m., 12 units 10 p.m.
Do you have a choice in what insulin you take in terms of the brand and all that kind of stuff? Or do you just get given it here in Ireland?
It can kind of depend. Like, that's what I was given. They're the two insulins that I've been on since I was diagnosed. I was at an appointment a number of years ago and they wanted me to change onto a different long-lasting. But I said, why? And then we decided that I wasn't going to change my long-lasting.
So I don't know.
I stayed on Lantus and NovoRapid for 10 plus years.
Okay, question number two. Like you say, there are 180 to 320 additional decisions we make a day. How many diabetic decisions do you make a day?
Oh, great question. And this actually kind of ties into something that I was talking about briefly on my Type 1% group chat today about ultimately what is the goal with diabetes. And ultimately, in my opinion, the goal with type 1 diabetes is to have your management as automatic as possible. And when our management is as automatic as possible, then we get time and energy and stress away from our diabetes because we're not thinking about it as much. So yes, of course, on average, I think a type 1 diabetic, much like the question, makes an additional 180 to 320 decisions per day. So that would be food, insulin, exercise, stress, hormones, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. All these things we need to be aware of. But when you are so confident and you are so comfortable in your insulin ratios, how exercise affects you, how stress affects you, how your ratios change during the day, when these things are all just ingrained in your head, then essentially, you're making those decisions without even realizing. So I probably make 200 to 300 decisions around my blood sugar every day, but I barely even feel like I'm making them. I'm barely even aware of the fact that I'm making them just because it's so automatic. So I will automatically make adjustments to ratios add on a unit, take on a unit here or there, plan in advance for exercise habitually, just without realizing. And that is always my goal. And that is always my goal for anybody that I work with too.
Next question, not diabetes related, but what's your biggest interest outside of fitness?
I feel like I don't have time to have other interests these days, which probably isn't a good thing. My three biggest in the past have been skateboarding, football, and art. So I used to be obsessed with skateboarding, like obsessed for years. And I used to skateboard for hours every day. Football was equally as obsessed. I was convinced I was going to be a professional footballer. That obviously didn't work out. And then obviously art. I did animation in college before getting into fitness. Currently, are we putting interests and hobbies in the same bracket here?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, definitely.
Is podcasting and growing a business?
This is diabetes related. Get out of here.
A sad answer is I actually don't really have much time to have other hobbies right now, which I'm working on.
You're interested in the TV show Ultimate Hell Week?
Oh yeah. Well, that's still kind of related to fitness, though.
Yeah, I would say that's more psychological. But I understand.
Yeah, I suppose like one of my main interests, and I suppose even being diagnosed with diabetes has been the main catalyst for that interest, is just like mindset and how you think about things. Yeah, I suppose mindset and how you manage things in your own head, yada, 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 these kind of things. What we talk about in the podcast all the time, which again is related to diabetes.
If anyone doesn't know, that TV show that Owen and I are obsessed with is where normal people, well, in this case, they're kind of celebrities, inverted commas, go and do army training, but like army ranger training, special forces training. And it's intense and it gets inside your head. Let's go on to question number four.
Before we get into question number four, Graham, I'm convinced that you're going to be on that show next year.
Well, this is how little I am viewed upon in the Irish celebrity scene. Now, I don't consider myself a celebrity anyway, even though they call this the celebrity version. They call it the professionals, actually. So they have
they kind of cover themselves in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, because they go, well, they're not celebrities, no celebrities in Ireland. Yeah. So they do like media people. There are radio presenters in there. So if you don't know, I'm also a radio presenter. And I messaged my agent last year and I go, I am obsessed with this TV show. I've heard that they struggle to get people because the pool is so small in Ireland. I go, can you put me forward for it next year? She's like, I'll have a word at the TV production company. She sent a message. And they were like, oh, we don't know if we're going to go into production next year, but we'll definitely keep his name on file. Fast forward 10 months, I see the press releases coming out of the new professionals. So that's how I'm viewed. Do you know, but I honestly was thinking this, all right? So I was watching it and I was like, God, that it's very difficult. So what happens is, say there's about 20 people put in and you see how far you can go until you have to either voluntary withdrawal or the rangers kick you out because they
it's like physical and psychological challenges that essentially try and force you to quit, basically.
And no word of a lie, every time I watch it, every episode, because it's happening now in Ireland, and I'm also watching the English version as well on Channel 4. Every time I watch it, I put myself within the show. So I'm like, okay, how would I deal with that? And I was like, if I ever withdrew, I knew everyone in my life would be like, Graham, well done for going on it. You came across great, except for one person. Owen Costello. Like, you quit? What are you talking about, you soft boy? I was like, Owen, they gagged me, tied my hands together and put me underwater. So? I'd be like, I honestly would be in there thinking, Owen is watching this right now and he's going to kill me if I quit. No word of a lie. That's what I'd be thinking when I watch it. I would probably go further just because I have Owen in my head. That's how much impact influence you have on me, Owen. That's good.
What can I say?
Or kind of
scary. How do you? By the way, that's absolutely true. If you did quit, I'd murder you.
Brenna, I couldn't. I honestly.
How do
I
you feel you
withdraw.
Would get on?
I think psychologically I would do well. Where I would struggle is with water and the cold. That's why, because I'm not a strong swimmer. But my fear in the water is actually drowning, not swimming. And they always have the buoyancy aids on them. So that would help
so
me
you're
out so much.
Like, you're never going to drown in a show like that.
So that would, psychologically, that would help me in terms of getting me over my fear of actually drowning, because they're not going to let me drown. Where I could fall down is, like, I'm obviously physically fit and I go to the gym, but there's former Irish rugby players on there. Like, there's big lads on there. So I know when it comes to the end and they're hauling, like, bloody tree trunks and stuff like that on their shoulders and they're working as a team, I'm like, oof. I think mentally I could do it, but maybe physically near the end it could get me. I'd get on to you though beforehand. I would get you to train me for a month beforehand.
A pep talk.
No, I'd actually get you to train, bring me to the mountains and like literally scream at me like I was in it. And I know you'd do it as well. I know. You'd get such satisfaction out of it.
I know. I was having this conversation with my dad after the first episode was last week, I think, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So I was having this conversation with my dad and I was like, see, if you got, and he was like, what would your chances be of getting on that? And I was like, well, if it was a diabetic Ultimate Hell Week, I'd probably, well, hopefully.
But there's a fitness influencer on it. That girl, that Rebecca girl, she's a fitness influencer. You're a fitness influencer.
Nah, well, not really. Like, but anyway. So I was saying, if you were on, all you have to do to win it is just not quit.
Yeah.
That's all you have to do. And he was like, yeah, well, all this, we're getting into talking about it and saying like, well, that's it. You literally just don't have to quit. You're not going to die. Mm. Like, of course you're not going to die. So you just don't have to quit. And then I was saying, and I think me and you have had this conversation before, and I know we're slightly going off topic here from diabetes questions, but I was saying, I'd love to do it without the cameras.
Yes, you said that.
Because that sort of challenge, like I would love to do that show. I would love it. But doing it with cameras is just that extra incentive for you to perform. And for me, that's like, oh, well, would you still do it if you weren't on TV in front of your friends and your family?
Absolutely not.
And that's, I think if you were to do that without the cameras, that would be amazing.
You could join the army.
Yeah, that's also true, but I've no interest really in doing that.
It's like when I said to my friend who's like intelligent enough, and I was like, oh, I'd love to just like, you know, learn loads about history and, you know, but like get someone to teach me and like read loads of books and like, but like I don't want to have to do all the exams and stuff like that. And John goes, yeah, it's called a library.
Yeah,
go exactly. Read.
See, I'd love to do that kind of thing, but I don't want to change what I do for work.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. Right. Let's go on. Next year we'll be on it. If you had to pick one aspect of diabetes to focus on, what makes the biggest difference to your levels? That's a great question.
Oh. This is kind of contradictory to what I constantly go on about to all my clients, and I've said it a million times before on the podcast. When it comes to you managing your diabetes, there is no silver bullet. There's no magic pill. There's no one thing you have to do. It's always, always, always consistency with small things brought together. For example, if you carb count and don't pre-bolus, they kind of interfere with themselves. If you exercise but eat crappy food all the time, it's like, well, they're kind of canceling themselves out. So it will always be an accumulation of the small things brought together, right? But if I was to pick one thing, it would probably be the food that you eat, the food that I eat. And what I mean by that is like the type of food that I eat, and then also the timing of food, as in, like, if I eat a Chinese 30 minutes before I go to bed. That's going to be a very different overnight blood sugar experience compared to if I eat, a tuna salad 2 hours before I go to bed. So it would be using the type of food that I eat as another form of medication. And I've actually put up a few posts on Instagram about like viewing your food as a form of medication. Why you live with type 1 diabetes is a great way to view it, because your food is what has the biggest and most immediate impact on your blood sugar. That's just a fact. So yeah, one thing would be managing what I put into my mouth, essentially.
Yeah. Next up, what do you find the hardest part of diabetes?
Ooh.
Another good question.
Probably just because it's a constant. And it's, and again, I've gone through this 100 times before on the podcast, but diabetes is easy to manage when like you're in a good headspace, you've good momentum, you're in routine, things seem to be falling into place nicely. But it's more difficult to manage, but it's also just as much there when things aren't going to plan. For example, yeah. Like you could get sick in another way. You could break your leg. You could lose your job. Somebody in your family could die. Whatever. All of these terrible things that can happen to you in your life, your diabetes is still going to be there. And even when you have an off day or an off week, or you're super stressed or incredibly busy with work, you still have to manage your diabetes. And oftentimes it's during those times that it comes back to bite you the most, because you're not even able to give it any sort of time or attention. Like, for example, if you're super stressed and you're up the walls about something, the last thing in the world you want to do is carb count and pre-bolus. But if you don't carb count and pre-bolus, a big high blood sugar is going to come back and bite you, which is going to add more stress and frustration to your day. So I suppose the most difficult side of it is still being switched on to it during times that you want to turn it off, basically.
And let's finish on this one, because these have been some great questions this week. Final one, let's go for this. What's your funniest diabetic moment?
There's one that I'm thinking of that I can't talk about in the podcast for sure.
As well. Does it involve a bus?
It does. It does. Nothing illegal or anything, by the way, just for people to know. But me and Graham have a funny diabetic bus story. But anyway, maybe.
I actually think the podcast would probably get taken down if you said it.
It probably would, wouldn't it?
By who, though? I don't know. The podcast overlords.
Anyway, the second one that comes to mind.
So that's the first thing I thought of.
We were only talking about that last week.
Yeah.
Second one that comes to mind was a nighttime hypo that I had. And I actually think I told this story on the podcast. But so as we all know, if you wake up in the middle of the night with a hypo, that's a hypo that hits you just a completely different way. You're just craving food and you feel as if you're melting into your bed until you get glucose to bring you up. But even during my lowest moments with hypos, I mean blood sugar lows, I always have that voice in my head that's like, don't overtreat it. Don't completely go overboard, because you're only gonna regret it. Now, as I always say, the absolute priority when you go low is to get your bloods back up. But my second priority is always don't go overboard, because inevitably you will see a massive rebound high. So a hypo, I think it was a few months ago, I had a hypo in the middle of the night. I woke up and I went downstairs and I think I'd eaten a few glucose tablets and I was eating an apple. And it was like 4 a.m. in the morning, so it was obviously dark outside. And I remember standing in my kitchen, looking at the kitchen window, And because it was dark and the lights were on, the window essentially kind of looked like a mirror because obviously it was dark outside. So I was looking at myself and I was standing in my boxers and I was eating this apple, waiting for my blood sugar to come back up. And I was physically pointing at myself saying, only eat this apple and eat nothing else. Because if you do, you're going to go to bed and you're going to wake up. You're going to wake up really, really high and you're going to be fuming. So I distinctly remember saying to myself out loud, don't eat more than this apple. And basically, I ate the apple and turned off the lights, walked out of the kitchen. And as I was closing the door from the other side, I closed the door. Didn't take my hand off the handle, paused, and then just went back in and absolutely destroyed the kitchen. And I went up to like 20 or something the next morning.
Oh, no.
But it doesn't even sound that funny. But I just remember vividly looking myself in the eye saying, do not overtreat this hypo because you're going to be fuming.
But the fact that you said it out loud as well, I can imagine that.
Yeah. That's my funniest moment.
There we go. That's six nice questions coming from Instagram. Thank you very much if you follow Owen and you have contributed to those question boxes. Owen posts them up every couple of weeks. So don't fret. We could get to your question at some stage. And if you want a longer question that doesn't fit into a question box in Instagram or just a general story, we always say it at the end of every podcast, theinselowenpodcast@gmail.com is where you can get it. If you want the spelling, you can go into the description down below in the wherever you're listening to this podcast. Owen, thank you.
Thank you, Graham. Couldn't have said it better myself. Please, if you have a story or question, don't hesitate to reach out. We love getting them and we appreciate you listening to the podcast. I hope you get the value that you were looking for every week and every episode because that's the purpose of the podcast. So until next week, have a good day, have a good week, look after your blood sugars, and we will speak to you soon. Take it easy.
Bye.